Hi, this is Melinda, and I am joined by Matt Edge today. Say hello, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm so excited to have him here because we're going to talk about something a little bit different, and that's men's issues. And are you excited to be with us today, Matt?
Definitely very excited, definitely a little nervous, but mostly excited for sure.
I'm excited for you to be here too. And I know I totally understand about the little bit of nervous. I'm just getting the hang of this podcast stuff and it is kind of nerve wracking, but it's fun. And I love the education that comes behind it. I learn something new every time just doing the podcast myself. So I'm excited about people hearing. A little bit about Matt, just so that you guys know, is Matt does work at MCP Counseling. He focuses on chronic pain, chronic illness, all the things that includes. Comes with depression and anxiety and adapting to new life skills, coping skills. He works a lot with men's issues because that is also affected. And that's actually one of the reasons why he's here today with me, because that kind of gets pulled in. He has always known that he was going to work with people in some way. That does show in his personality. He's got an outstanding personality about helping other people. Oh, he graduated from, you're welcome. It's the truth. It's the truth. Graduated from North Texas University and then went on to get his Master of Science for Clinical Mental Health Counseling. And now is finishing up hours as an LPC associate at MCP Counseling, and I'm super lucky to have him there. He also works with some of my families that are a little bit more diverse, and they have some heteronormative people in the family, and they have some gender diversity there or sexuality diversity. And so he kind of helps everybody come together and understanding. That's a good way to say that, don't you think?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's good.
I think that's what you do. I don't know that I've ever asked you that. that's my spiel, and I'm sticking to it. Did I forget anything else? Let's see. I know you're wonderful. I'm trying to think of if there was anything else that I was going to mention in your intro, but I think that's it.
The only other thing I would throw in that I handle a lot of is just anger management. That's one of the big three that I have right now. Yeah.
Oh, no. And you know what? That's actually a really good one because that comes up in men's issues. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's why it's so effective to put all those together and I'm going to ask you this, and I'm so excited to hear some of the conversation about this, because I think that it's so hard for men to come in for counseling. And so anyway, I don't want us to get too far ahead, so I'm going to let you, I'll ask you that later. First of all, I want to know, what is your type of therapy and how do you use it? What do you love about it? Tell me a little bit about what you do in the room.
Yeah. So, I like to say I use a mix between person-centered and what's reality therapy or choice theory. So for those listening that might not know what that is, person-centered tends to put a big emphasis on empathetic understanding and listening, unconditional positive regard, and congruence. And no one ever really knows what congruence means when I say that. So how I describe that in my intake sessions is normally by saying, I'm never going to know your life as well as you do. So I'm not going to come in here and try to be an expert on your life based off of my own experiences, because that's not fair to you. So instead, what it looks like for me is it tends to be a lot of the client talking about what is important to them on that day for that session, and me kind of listening, reflecting what they say back to them, and allowing the client to either agree with my reflection or correct what they said until they can accurately put words to how they feel. And then the choice theory part for me, I guess I'll explain it a little bit first. So choice theory is all about how humans have five basic needs: survival, freedom, fun, power, and then love and belonging. And the love and belonging is like the most important part. And we attempt to satisfy these needs through our behavioral choices. It also believes that all behavior is total behavior, and total behavior is made up of four components. So acting, thinking, feeling, and physiology. all of our behavior is chosen, but we only have direct control over the acting and the thinking components. So we can only control our feeling and physiology indirectly through how we choose to act and think. So for me, before I realized that I was person-centered and really chose that as my theory, I really leaned hard into reality therapy. I thought that was what I was going to be. And so that was the first, year and a half of my grad school experience. I was learning that. And I think the emphasis on choices being important, and kind of like, what am I trying to say? Like, I think the choices we make say a lot about where we're at, whether those are conscious or unconscious decisions. And so I've kind of brought that aspect into my person-centered. And so I tend to have a little bit more emphasis on the choices people make than probably a normal person-centered counselor would. So I kind of ran by there a little bit, but...
This is what this is about. It's about learning. And because I think that you're really setting the stage right now for men's issues are hard to talk about, you know, and I know today we're just going to kind of hit on the topical of intimacy and go into just a little bit of intimacy as far as sexual connection and those kind of things are. But I do think that whenever men come in, this is actually a really good approach and a foundation. It would be a lot more welcoming than, say, for instance, a mushy gushy. And and so I like this because I think that this to me explains why you can bridge so easily with some of these concepts. That's awesome. I like how you explain that too. So no, I think that was not rambling. I actually appreciated the explanation.
And the cool thing about it too is that, you know, depending on who the client is, if I need to get, you know, quote unquote mushy gushy, I can. Because it's a lot of just reflecting back what they were saying. But if that person, say a guy, comes in and that's the opposite of what they want, I can give them that because it's, you know, just reflecting what they're giving me back to them. So.
Yeah, I like that. I like that because, and then also expanding. And I see room that you can expand if you have someone who's maybe too on the rationalizing thing and logic aspect, you know, then you can pull them a little bit more into the emotional or feeling side of it by doing this. Because if you're reflecting back and then allowing them to kind of explain, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that brings in some open area for you to kind of play with, to have some emotional talk.
And not to get too far ahead of myself, but, you know, especially with men who sometimes, not always, but sometimes tend to not know how to put words to, you know, how they're feeling and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Being able to point out those emotions and feelings for them is usually very, let's go with impactful. So
I like that. No, yeah. I really do like that. So no, I think that's a good foundation to kind of jump us into the next piece of the conversation that I kind of wanted to bring to the table, because, I want to ask just kind of with that, like, where do you see that men really struggle the most, you know, not just sexual issues, but men issues?
So men's issues are so interesting to me because, you know, as men, we're not supposed, quote unquote, supposed to have any issues. Society constantly, you know, tells us things like man up, you know, tough it out, grow a pair. And no one really talks about men's issues in the first place. So, you know, as a man who, by the way, is totally human and like any other human on this planet, you know, issues and struggles and problems will inevitably come up. But because we've heard from such a young age that we're not supposed to have these problems, men have a tendency to, you know, bury it, push it down, hide it, not talk about it, not really deal with it. And it tends to just get worse and worse until it inevitably bubbles up to the surface in a way that is, you know, safer to express, such as like anger, which, you know, we were talking about anger management being one of my specialties. Yes. There's a reason for that I deal with men's issues and anger management. So if I had to say what I think the biggest issue men deal with, it's feeling like there's something wrong with them for having those emotions that everyone has, and not feeling like it's okay for them to ever express those emotions. So like, yeah, so not knowing, not feeling like it's okay for them to express those emotions, and then feeling like something is inherently wrong with them for even having them because no one told them that that was okay.
Oh, that's awesome. And it does hit so many things like right on the head. Like I think that one of the questions that it kind of pulls up for me is whenever you work with maybe some gender variance, or you work with families that have gender variance in there, do you really find that some of these rigid gender, lines that we make as a society and directions like that males have to have and that females have to have, whenever you work with a gender variant and you, any, and I'm talking about anything, you can open this up to anything, heterosexual parents or with gender diverse kids or gender diverse kids with some maybe some in, you know, of their own, sorry, now I'm rambling. I cannot think of the word that I'm looking for. With some of their own apprehensions about being gender diverse because they've been trained to be male or they've been socialized to be females. Does that make sense? Yeah, and so like, so whenever you have this, do you see this in gender diverse people or families? I guess that's a good way to kind of state that. Like, do you see this being a problem?
Well, I think the first thing when you were talking about that came up is talking about some of my, trans teens who maybe were born a female and then later, transitioned to a male, having to now navigate this society that has dictated, as a male that you're not supposed to express or talk about any of the stuff that was okay for you, years past when you were growing up and stuff like that. And so I think obviously every person's different and they kind of go through it in their own struggle, in their own way, whatever. But I have noticed with my trans male teen clients that, it does tend to be an issue kind of learning to navigate that and realizing what's quote unquote okay and what's not. What's, I guess a better way of saying that is what's societally, socially okay.
Socially acceptable.
Thank you. Yes. Words are hard.
We're a good team. Socially acceptable. And I know that was kind of a broad question. And I guess because it just, whenever you were saying that my mind went so many different places with like, wow, that's so powerful in like just our practice, as far as sexual expression and gender expression and how we have very heteronormative parents who come in sometimes and they're struggling because they love their kids and they want to be there for them, but they have no idea because they've got these rigid boundaries that society's kind of set up for them. And then does that hurt their masculinity, if they're a dad who accepts things, a trans female, daughter or anyway. So it just brought up like a lot of, just like a million more questions that I could ask you that we're not going to go any further into, but that it does, it brings up a whole conversation of how our society has just set such rigid standards for males. And I do believe that. I mean, I raised a son and he had very rigid expectations for him, I remember he told me one as an adult one time, he said, oh yeah, you told me boys don't cry. And I'm like, oh no, you didn't hear that from me. I don't know who you heard that from me. And like, I spent a year or two fretting over it because I'm like, oh my God, did I say that as a young mom? I'm like, that's horrible. Boys cry. And so anyway, that's kind of like, but we're taught it. It's so ingrained, in us, even as females, we're taught how to raise young men. you know, open up the door, do this, do that. We're taught how to raise. So anyway, brings up a lot of questions, not just a men's issue. So I'm going to go back to the original content, but I'm just saying, this is, as you can see, this is definitely one that I'm very passionate about. And that's why I'm just so excited that you're kind of growing your practice and you're seeing that this could kind of be a place that you flourish in, that you really feel strong in. And so that makes me excited because I feel like it's so powerful.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, there are so many different, like you just said, there's so many different outlets that you can kind of branch off from men's issues. And all of them are really under talked about, underserved. You know, it doesn't matter which way you go. There's a kind of a need for all of it. So we could be on here for, you know, hours talking about all of it. And honestly, that'd be a lot of fun, but you know.
Well, I know that I'm going to ask you about podcasts. And if you don't list off that you're going to be starting one yourself about men's issues, I'm not going to harass you from now until all end, because you have a great personality. Obviously, you know, if I'm doing it and, you know, can have fun with it, I think that you could bring so much to the table. So I'm just going to throw that in there, but I'm going to let you probably list it. And, you know, I told you that I was going to ask you if you had any podcasts that you would suggest. Oh, you know what? There was one more thing. Yes, any, and cause we, this is sexual, sex gen. So I guess I should ask, are there any kind of, connected to like erectile dysfunction or any kind of struggles that you see specifically that would be very hard for men to come into an office and talk to someone about? I thought I would throw this in here, if you don't mind, because I did want to talk a little. I told you we'd keep it kind of general, but I did kind of want to ask about like if low libido or erectile dysfunction or early ejaculation or delayed ejaculation, like any of those that really hit home with men as far as their sexual interactions with their partners. Are there any of those that you've seen or that you feel like this is a need for people to be talking more about? Because I feel like it is.
Oh, it's a huge need that needs to be talked about and normalized. I remember the very first, one of the very first male clients I ever had came in and I had been seeing him for a while. And I remember there was a specific session where he was, you know, way more quiet than he normally was. Something was pressing on him and I couldn't figure out what it was, but he was just straight up uncomfortable. And towards the end, I finally got him to talk about it a little bit. And we ended up talking about it for multiple sessions, cause you know, you can't fit all of it in at the end of the session. But it had to do with him having a low libido. He ended up getting diagnosed with low testosterone later, but he didn't know that at the time.
But they don't go to the doctor and ask.
Exactly. Because it's such a sensitive topic, you know, as a dude, as a guy, you're supposed to be this alpha male, like, you know, almost like a predator type thing where you are high libido all the time. And so if you aren't that, if you're lacking that, you all of a sudden see yourself as something's wrong with me. I need to feel shame. I need to feel like I'm less than. And so you don't talk about it. You don't go to the doctor because, you know, what if that doctor is now a guy who now thinks less of me, you know? And that's a whole different conversation that we could get into of, you know, males talking to other males and how it's so difficult. And so, low libido is huge. And erectile dysfunction is right there. I had another client, I don't see many couples anymore. But when I used to, but when I used to see couples, I had a couple who came in and, the wife actually brought it up. And the second she mentioned, you know, her husband's erectile dysfunction, you could just see his face deflate, the shame that came across his face. You know, he, without ever saying anything, I could tell this dude felt like less than a man. And so having to work with not only him on, you know, normalizing it for him and talking about how common it is, how it's fixable, you know, with medication, stuff like that, but also you know, having to talk to the wife about the way she talks about it, the language she uses, stuff like that. There is so much on men's issues related to sexual issues that needs to be talked about and is important to be talked about. So that's just scratching the surface. But those two are two that I have examples of readily available, I guess.
No, and I think that it is. I think that, you know, in the LGBT community I work with, I think that one of the most common things that I see is this, and my heterosexual clients, but I think with a male with gay relationships, I think that it's really, it's difficult whenever you have someone who is struggling and the language that's used, and to help them kind of be gentle with each other, you know, and that's something in the heterosexual clients that I work with. It's very common because women are trained to think that, oh my goodness. And the other side of that is that because if there's nothing wrong with him, there's something wrong with me. Yeah. I'm too fat. I'm too this. I'm too that. And so they immediately go into this. And then the conversations are zero between the two about it. It's more kind of like they start to go on the defense. And so, no, I think you hit that like exactly where I wanted you to, because that's something that I would like for us to talk about, you know, in the future more. I know today we're just kind of introducing some information and kind of generating some thought behind this. And also because I asked you like for some help for podcasts, like, because I just know that there's a need for men to have podcasts that are available, because I also have learned in studying these podcast situations that, that men listen to them while they work out and all kinds of stuff. So I think that it would be very beneficial. So, to kind of close that for now, because I think we can come back to that like a million times over and not have enough to say. I think that let's kind of move on. Have you researched any podcasts or shared any podcasts with your clients? Or do you have any podcasts or a podcast that you're doing?
for the podcast that I may or may not be doing, I will say maybe we'll see what the future holds. I'm not committing to anything as of now.
I bet your boss is going to have a thing about that.
But there's definitely a possibility of something in the future. So we will see.
Yay! Carolina's going to be listening to this and she's going to go, yes!
Oh my gosh. I know I'm going to hear all about it.
We have a great team. I love our team. Yeah, that's
pretty great. I don't have many podcasts specifically meant for men and men's issues. For my therapists out there, the trauma therapist is a great one to listen to. They obviously don't talk about only men's issues, but they do bring up men's issues related to trauma occasionally. I know they put out an episode earlier this month. I think it was like the very beginning of November, about male survivors of sexual abuse, which is,
oh my gosh, that's such an important one. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I was going to say it doesn't get nearly as much attention and focus as it should. So I'm right there with you.
No, it does not.
Yeah. And then for things like depression and anxiety, The Hilarious World of Depression is a great one. That one's by John Moe, and it really tries to, you what?
I love the name.
Oh yeah. No, it's great. Cause you don't think depression and comedy go together, but they actually do a really good job of not only like normalizing depression specifically with men, but like giving it a comedic spin. So you don't feel like you're getting lectured the whole time, which is great.
No, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I did ask a couple of my friends about any they had for, anything related to men's issues or mental health. One I got a couple of times was the Mental Illness Happy Hour with Paul Gilmartin, I think is how you say that. I'm not sure.
That's how I was, yeah.
I've never personally listened to that one, so I can't speak on it other than saying I have some friends who really like it and recommend it.
No, that's okay. If you've got some friends that recommend it, that's fine. And that's kind of one of those that if you haven't ever listened to it, but you know other men who enjoy it, that's okay. I mean, I would listen to it before you share it with any clients, but yeah, you can share it with me.
What else?
I did ask for a variety, you know, so I do appreciate you bringing like a variety to the table, and that's okay if it's some that you haven't explored thoroughly.
Yeah. The only other one I can think about is in terms of reversing some of the ingrained beliefs men tend to have about the need for, you know, money and success and power at all costs. 10% Happier with Dan Harris is a really good one. They tend to talk about things like how striving for success and maintaining your mental health don't have to be mutually exclusive. And I think that's really important because, you know, among all the other things that guys are taught from an early age, guys are taught that, you know, success, power, and wealth are everything, and that we need to be willing to sacrifice our happiness and mental health, and always put work first before everything in order to, you know, really, quote unquote, make it as a man. And so that kind of talks about how, you know, you can have success and have that grind mentality, but also make time for things like self-care and meditation and other things that are really important for, you know, maintaining that mental health. So I like that one.
No, I like that. I like that one. Actually, I may have to listen to that one. I like that to see if I want to send it to clients, because that's a really good one. Because I do have a lot of clients who struggle with that they feel so, and then that affects that libido and that, you know, or that desire to even engage as a masculine individual, you know, because if they're a failure in other places, like it really attaches also to the bedroom, unfortunately. And so, no, I think that that's a good one. I may have to steal that one from you. And also The Edge, whenever you create that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I like
or blow past edgy that talk. A little bit. I like that. Okay. So another area transition since I saw that one. Another area that I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about was, how do you motivate, and this is kind of what I touched on at the beginning of our conversation, how do you motivate male clients to talk about the struggles that they're having? How do you bring that to the table?
I mean, it's hard. And like I said earlier about something else, you know, everyone is different. We're taught from an early age that having struggles is a sign of weakness. And so men are taught not to talk about our struggles in an attempt to look like a man is, you know, quote unquote, supposed to look. I remember when I first started as a counselor, I would have men come in for a first session, and there would be times where I would get them to open up about something, you know, serious, where they would cry or show a really strong emotion. And I would leave the session thinking, wow, that was really powerful. Like, we got a lot of work done. I can't wait to work with them in the future. But they would leave my office and I would never see or hear from them again. And it honestly took me a while to figure out why I could keep all these female clients, but a lot of my male clients just weren't coming back. What I eventually learned is that the men who cried in that first session were so self-conscious about how me, as another male, saw them after crying in that session, that it was safer for their, you know, egos, based off of what they've been taught their whole lives, to just kind of ghost me, leave me unread, and you know, protect themselves and not come back. So once I learned that, I really started to slow down a lot more with my male clients, unless they're pushing to take it somewhere immediately, which does happen, you know, every once in a while. I try to spend the first couple sessions really getting to know them, letting them get to know me, and like really focusing on the rapport aspect more than I would with, you know, say my female clients. And not to say that, you know, with my females that rapport is not important, because it is, but like with males, I know that there's a certain level of, they have to especially be able to trust me as another male before they feel comfortable sharing.
No, I think there's a difference. No, yeah. I agree with you. I think there's a difference.
And even then, when, you know, we do get to a point where they really do feel safe to share some of these intimate details, you know, whenever that first session that there are tears or any strong emotions, I try really hard to remember to mention that, you know, hey, I know as a guy, I can feel really vulnerable to be in front of another dude and show this side of you. And I want you to know that there's no judgment for me. I really appreciate the vulnerability it took for you to come in here and say the things that you just said, and stuff like that. And that has seemed to help a lot in terms of just like easing some of that, because inevitably they always come in that next session. I shouldn't say always, but they usually come in that next session, and there still is like that, this level of regret, because it's, you know, no matter what I say, like that's so inherent in all of us because of the way that, you know, society and that we're raised and all that stuff, yeah, that we talked about, no matter what I say, that's still going to be there. But it has seemed to help a lot in terms of easing it enough to where they feel comfortable enough to come back and kind of face that vulnerability, which has been cool. So, yeah,
I think that's awesome. No. And so whenever you kind of made that turn and you had your first client come back in and you got to see that regret, is that really kind of what solidified it for you, that you were like, okay, wait a minute, I got to change my approach, because like he's come back and I can still see it, you know, that he's uncomfortable. Like, so that means that other people who we were just like immediately getting there, you know, with something, they definitely, you know, did not, they felt the shame and the regret and stuff about the crying and things.
Well, it's so funny. I actually, the first time I ever said that, it wasn't because I realized it or because, you know, I had an epiphany or anything like that. I just, it kind of came out one time. And a couple sessions later, I was telling my then supervisor about it. And he kind of put the connection together of, wow, like these people don't feel, you know, they're feeling too vulnerable too quickly. Especially with the tears. And so like, he's the one that actually told me, hey, slow it down a little bit.
Oh, that's
so,
yeah.
It really just kind of happened, out of
organically.
Yeah. Which I kind of like better. Cause
totally.
Worse, you know?
Yeah. And also, you know, and you were heard, like that client came back and, you know, he heard you. I mean, you're a very like connected clinician, period. And so I know that clients appreciate you just as a human, like you connect with them in a very good way. And so that part, I know that they get, so they would probably feel safe enough to say stuff. And then they would go like, oh, wait, the world tells me I'm not allowed to feel this way. And this may make me this way or that way, because I talked to this guy about this. And then now he probably thinks I'm a wimp because I cried on our first, you know, session, whenever really what it shows is how bad they were hurting, you know?
I think that's exactly it. I think in the moment, you know, the room, me, everything was safe. But the second you leave the room, all of that, that regret, that self-doubt, that stuff that's normally there in a normal environment kind of creeps back in, and you realize, oh, that was probably really stupid. I probably looked really dumb. He's probably, you know, judging me, and I shouldn't go back. And so, yeah, I think you hit it right.
Oh, that makes so much sense. No, I think that's good. But you know what? I'm not a male therapist. And so like, I don't ever have that experience. Like everybody just looks at me like I'm their mom, grandma. Now I've gotten so old. okay. So I think that that's awesome. There was something else that I did want to ask, but now cannot remember it.
That's okay. I literally tell every one of my clients on a first session that, hey, at least once per session, I will completely forget what I was talking about. And they always laugh. And then it happens the first time. And they're like, oh, you were serious. You weren't kidding. So me, I promise.
Well, we talked about so much good stuff. And so is there anything else that like came up for you or that you thought about that you might want to mention? I'm kind of thinking about what we had jabbered about beforehand, but I think we talked about everything, didn't we?
I think we scored.
I think we did a good job here. I'm really proud of us.
I think we nailed it. This was great.
So I am super excited to hear what you name your podcast and when you get it started. And I will be a sex therapist on it for you. I volunteer. There you go. You've got
you
it.
You know what?
My podcast,
I would love to have you on the fictional podcast that is not yet to be named as of this moment, which might happen in the future.
You're breaking my heart right now. You're breaking my heart.
Might happen. I just, you know, need to do some planning.
So much. You have so much to give. You got to get out there and you got to start giving it. You got lots of good information. Got lots of good information to give. Okay. Then I appreciate so much you sitting and visiting with me and just having a good talk. And I look forward to maybe one that's a little bit more focused on some of the sexual issues of males. And I think that you and I had kind of discussed maybe having a second one that we would bring those more into focus and kind of how to work with those and how to handle them from a male perspective. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so down for that. That'll be so much fun.
Yeah. I'm excited about it too, but I appreciated you doing this kind of introduction to like just working with male clients and getting them into the room and how they can start to open up and things that they can utilize out there, podcasts and stuff that might help them out too. So if anybody has any questions that's listening or has anything that you'd like to ask Matt, his email will be listed in the description for the podcast. We very much appreciate you being with us. And this is Sex June. Thank you.
Bye.